well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Larry Keene, Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, also a part of Protect Liberty PAC, which is be on the air and probably on your internet screens as well. Talking up pro-Second Amendment candidates and reminding voters of the dangers of a Kamala Harris presidency in the months to come. Before we get to that conversation with Larry, though, let's talk about this for a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, well, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. Now, I confess I did not watch Joe Biden's speech last night. I don't know why I feel the need to confess that. I can state it forthrightly. I did not watch Joe Biden's speech last night. Missy is getting ready to go through another round of chemotherapy. We've got her wedding anniversary coming up next week, and she's going to feel miserable. So we decided to celebrate a little early. I took her out to dinner last night, and we did not watch Joe Biden give his speech from the White House. Basically, a stump speech for Kamala Harris's campaign, as well as sort of a look back at what he considers to be his greatest hits, taking credit for the decline in violent crime over the past couple of years and pledging to do more on, quote-unquote, gun violence in his remaining months in office. I confess, I don't understand how it is that Joe Biden is not competent or capable of being the nominee, but he is capable and competent enough to remain in the White House. I don't get that. The logic there just escapes me. But that's an argument that Democrats are going to have to make, quite frankly, not me. And it does look like Kamala Harris is going to be the nominee. I know the DNC has technically given other candidates until Saturday to declare that they are also running for president. But the party has really coalesced around Kamala Harris. And, and there are a couple of reasons for that, maybe, right? It avoids a nasty open convention fight. If not Kamala Harris, if not the vice president, well, who would that candidate be? But, you know, I never discount the egos of politicians. And it is interesting to me that we haven't seen anybody step up and say, hey, you know what, I think I could do a better job. Which makes me think that a lot of these, you know, potential names that we had heard floated, who are now a lot of them are being discussed as perhaps vice presidential picks, can't help but think that a lot of them don't want to throw their hat into the ring because they don't want to lose in November. They would rather keep their powder dry until, you know, 2028 rather than, you know, run now and lose and be damaged goods 4 years from now. So, you know, again, the media is doing their utmost to puff up Kamala Harris, to not talk about her positions, not talk about her policies. And it's going to be up to gun owners to, I think, really raise attention to Harris's long history in support of some extreme positions when it comes to the right to keep arms. In fact, she doesn't even believe that we have an individual right to keep our arms, or at least she didn't in 2008 when she defended Washington, D.C.'s ban on handguns and their storage requirements that prevented anybody from keeping their firearms stored in a way that they could use them for self-defense. And that's not the only extreme position that she's taken. Again, let's kick off the conversation with Larry Keene, Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Yes, Kamala Harris's anti-Second Amendment history among the topics of today's conversation. Take a look and a listen. Larry, thanks for joining me on the program today. Glad you got the black shirt memo, by the way. Thank you very much.
pleasure to be with you as always.
Good to see you. All right. So since you and I spoke last, we've had several major upheavals in our political system. We had the attempt on Donald Trump's life. We've seen the resignation of the Secret Service director. We've seen Democrats try to turn the attempt on Trump's life into a debate about gun control and whether or not modern sporting rifles should be banned. We've seen Joe Biden drop out of the presidential race, and Kamala Harris has assumed the mantle of the Democratic nominee, not official yet, but the party seems to be coalescing behind her. How does that change what NSSF is doing in this election cycle, if at all? Because I know you've got Protect Liberty PAC. Does the messaging change? I mean, how has all of this upheaval impacted your election plans or the Protect Liberty PAC's election plans?
Well, I don't think it really does, because she's so tied to the Biden administration's, and she is part of the Biden administration. So she inherits all that baggage. She, for example, is the border czar that's never been to the border. So I don't think it really changes. We'll see who she decides to put on the ticket with her. It's ironic that they attack President Trump and say he's a threat to democracy while they have a coronation in effect. But I'm not surprised that Biden stepped down. I thought that would occur even before the debate, but certainly after the debate, it was obvious that he was not tenable. It raises questions about whether he should remain in office. You know, and all of the people in the media, as well as the people surrounding him, including the vice president, that lied to the American public about President Biden's demise of his faculties, which is a very serious matter as the commander in chief. So that's an issue, I think. But our plans, I mean, obviously we will oppose her vigorously through our Protect Liberty PAC that we've launched. It's starting to pick up steam and grow. And we would certainly invite anyone in your audience that wants to do something about the politics and protect our liberty and freedoms, including, importantly, the Second Amendment, to go to protectlibertypac.com, Protect Liberty PAC, and make a contribution, whatever you can afford, $5, $10, $100. It will be used to expressly advocate for the election of candidates who support the Second Amendment. We are continuing to run our gun vote campaign to register gun owners, to educate them on where the candidates stand, and then to make sure that come election day, they don't risk their rights and they gun vote. And of course, voting will start in some places. Early voting starts in September. So the election is right around the corner. The Second Amendment is on the ballot, particularly, for example, if Kamala Harris, as some news reports indicate, might select Senator Mark Kelly from Arizona, who's the husband of Gabby Giffords. I think the most anti-gun ticket you could imagine from the Democrats ever. Biden and Harris was bad enough, but Mark Kelly, I mean, I guess the folks from every town will have to vacate the White House Office of Gun Control so that the Giffords people could put their people in there. But it's an important election. I hope all your listeners get registered. If they aren't already, got to show up. You got to exercise your rights. Don't risk your rights. Gun vote. And if you can support the Protect Liberty PAC, that would be greatly appreciated.
Let's talk about Kamala Harris. I know you've got a piece up. In fact, my colleague Tom Knighton wrote about your piece at Bearing Arms today, kind of going through Kamala Harris's gun control history, which, I mean, as you say, the Biden-Harris ticket, I think, was the most anti-gun ticket in history, right? Joe Biden running for president in 2019 declared the firearms industry the enemy. Kamala Harris, when she was a candidate for president before she suspended her campaign before the Iowa caucuses, she had called for, mandatory buybacks of assault weapons, right? Basically, if you don't turn them over to the government, we're going to call you a criminal. Right. But even going back to 2008 in the Heller decision, when she was the district attorney in San Francisco, she helped author a amicus brief that argued that D.C.'s gun ban was just fine. Its storage laws didn't violate the Second Amendment because the Second Amendment didn't protect an individual right to keep and bear arms. Yeah. That was the position that the district attorneys took. And they warned of all of the chaos that would ensue if the Supreme Court, threw out D.C.'s handgun ban. So this is
none of those horrors occurred, of course. And There's not a gun control law that she doesn't like. You're right. She supports confiscation of firearms. It's a radical position. And I might add, she ushered in the microstamping requirement in California when she was the attorney general. So by certifying that it was unencumbered by patent restrictions, even though there are patents on the technology, that, by the way, as we all know, doesn't work, but.
Yeah, you're right. No, she's kind of like the Will Rogers of gun control, right? Never met a gun control law she didn't like. And Mark Kelly, you talk about vice presidential candidates. The names that I'm hearing, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, who is term limited, right? So there's a gubernatorial election this year. So Democrats could, they could, if she tapped Roy Cooper, they don't have to worry about filling a Senate seat. They don't have to worry about, okay, well, what does this do to, Democratic politics? You've got Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, who may be the least anti-gun of the four names that are being mentioned. He allowed constitutional carry to take effect without vetoing it, but he didn't sign the bill into law in Kentucky. You got Josh Shapiro, the governor and former attorney general of Pennsylvania, who has long been hostile to our right to keep and bear arms.
Yes, yeah.
And then you've got Mark Kelly, right? The co-founder of Giffords, who, again, I think has a very unique position, right? He is the spouse of a woman who was, again, the subject of an assassination attempt. He has portrayed himself as a gun owner in favor of, common sense, reasonable measures, but he has backed things like a ban on so-called assault weapons. His wife, Gabby, in an interview with Time Magazine, I think it was last year, was asked, so why do you keep, what keeps you going? And her response was, no more guns.
Yeah.
And Peter Ambler, the head of the director of Giffords at the time, tried to step in and said, well, that's not what she meant. And she repeated it. No more guns. That's what she's
Yeah.
after. That's what Giffords is about. And so I.
Sadly, that many of the Democratic Party do not believe in the Second Amendment. They would ban it if, and repeal it if they could. I will give Gavin Newsom credit. At least he's intellectually honest by saying you have to have a constitutional amendment, right? So, but it's very, I mean, if people don't think the Second Amendment is on the ballot in November, they are sadly mistaken. It absolutely is.
Again, I'm going to ask you to speculate here, but I know that Kamala Harris mentioned gun control as one of the issues in her first speech, after basically assuming the nomination. Do you think she will make gun control one of her big issues in this campaign?
Absolutely, no question about it. She has said in her first, speech as the presumptive nominee that she wants to ban modern sporting rifles. She wants universal background checks, which means national registration, and I think she said red flag laws. So, and she has said it's going to be a top issue for her in her campaign. And if she is elected, she will pursue all of those issues. And if she has a Democrat Congress, she will try to pass legislation. But remember when she ran in 08, she talked to, or rather, she ran for the White House. She talked about how she was going to do executive orders. She's not going to wait for Congress. She's just going to go ban rifles. And was she going to do order ATF to go confiscate firearms from law-abiding owners? The Second Amendment is on the ballot, and people need
Absolutely.
to
And,
respond.
we talk about executive orders. Thankfully, we did get Loper Bright from the Supreme Court this year. But again, if Kamala Harris has the votes in Congress to pass legislation, she probably has the votes in Congress to pack the Supreme Court full of anti-gun justices, too, right?
Well, and Biden last night said he wants to, Supreme Court reform. They want
Reform, yeah.
term limits. That requires a constitutional amendment that, they're gonna, but they will try to pack the court. And Kamala Harris will, if there's a Democrat-controlled Senate, they will do away with the filibuster. And then they will just pass whatever they want and shove it down our throats. So it's not just the White House, the key Senate races, will decide who controls the Senate and who, as well as in the House, who controls the House. So people need to get registered to vote, and they need to get educated, and they need to participate in democracy, right? They support Protect Liberty PAC. If you're uncomfortable making contributions to other groups, this is an opportunity. We're trying to, NSSF is trying to provide new trusted leadership on this issue, the Second Amendment, and provide a place where people can support the Second Amendment if they're not comfortable supporting other organizations. They can support Protect Liberty PAC. The money, 100% of those donations goes to the cause. There's no skimming off the top or anything like that. No one's buying suits or houses on golf courses. That's really important. And then obviously on election day, you got to show up and vote.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so get back to Protect Liberty PAC for a second. Obviously, you say you're going to be targeting Kamala Harris with your campaign ads. Have you identified any particular battleground states or key Senate or House races? I mean, I'm thinking of Montana, for example. I cannot imagine that Kamala Harris is going to be a benefit to Jon Tester's reelection campaign.
No, I mean, the battleground states are well known. Arizona, Nevada, Montana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and now, the map is expanded, at least on the presidential map, Virginia, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Georgia. So, but on the Senate races, it's Arizona, Nevada, Montana, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, these, Ohio. So the map is, there's no secret as to what the map looks like. And those are the races that matter, right? Like, and we'll decide both the outcome of who controls the Senate and who controls the White House. Biden and Harris, and now Harris and whomever, cannot afford to lose Pennsylvania. They can't afford to lose Michigan, Wisconsin. The path to the White House goes through those couple of states.
All right. And you talked about executive orders from Kamala Harris. She did say that I'll give Congress 100 days if they don't pass what I want. Executive order time. One of the things that we've been hearing, when I talked with Pete Fraselli not long ago, former deputy assistant director of the ATF, he said that he has been hearing that the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention had been pressuring the ATF to enact a rule that would treat Glock semi-automatic handguns as machine guns. He says that to date, Steve Dettelbach has resisted that a call from the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. But we have seen this lawsuit filed by the city of Chicago, originally filed in state court, then it was dropped, and then it was refiled in federal court, and then they.
Actually, the opposite. It was filed in federal court originally,
Oh, okay.
and then the next day filed in state court and added an FFL and a range and Glock Austria to the case. So,
Well, that was
yeah.
okay. Hang on. That was yesterday or a couple of days ago that they did that, right? But originally this was filed. Now correct me if I'm wrong. I think this was originally filed in Cook County court because they were citing the Illinois law,
It
that
was
was, about empowering.
filed in federal court just against Glock Inc., the
Okay.
U.S. company, alleging those Illinois state law violations, but it was in federal court.
Okay.
Out of the blue, they voluntarily dismissed the case, and then the next day filed in state court in Cook County against Glock Austria, a retailer, and a range in state court. All of the same claims, but they make these allegations against the dealer because they sold Glocks legally.
Yeah.
Some were traced, and then the range, because they have a Class 3 license, and so they're allowed to possess actual machine guns, and had customers at the range legally, lawfully use those machine guns. But they sued Glock Austria, where the design was originally created, trying to say that Glock pistols are machine guns. I'm not surprised Dettelbach won't go there because it would be absurd. But he was in, and my understanding is he was involved in trying to pressure, along with the White House, Glock to change their design of their perfectly reliable pistol. In fact, one of the allegations against the retailer is, well, you touted, Mr. Retailer, that the Glock pistol is reliable and safe, but you didn't say it could be illegally converted to, you know, a machine gun. Like, you know,
I mean, I gotta say, I read the latest complaint. And I mean, honestly, you know, when they went after the range, so they said the range, you know, has been advertising their full auto experience. I found one press release from 2017, yeah. Different owners even of this range at this point. And they talked about how they were using, how the range was using a modified Glock. Well, no, they talked about the range website talked about using a Glock 18, which is not modified. That's, again, that's it comes, you know, with the ability to shoot full auto, which is why me and other folks can't purchase it. So, I mean, they're really playing fast and loose with even the basic facts, much less the allegations that Glock is, you know, knowingly producing a product that can be readily converted to machine guns.
Well, what's really interesting about the case is that when it was originally filed against Glock, and every town is representing the city, along with a law firm, another anti-gun law firm, John Feinblatt from Everytown put out a tweet talking about that Glock would not agree to, at a meeting with the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, would not agree to change its design. And that was the day, he tweeted that the day they filed the lawsuit. Well, how does John Feinblatt know that? Because Rob Wilcox, I would say, Rob Wilcox from was former lobbyist for Everytown, now works in the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, called him and said, Glock wouldn't knuckle under, so go sue him. And so, frankly, Chairman Comer from the House Oversight Committee has sent two letters now to the White House demanding documents about the, you know, the interactions between that office and Everytown in the city of Chicago. And he also sent a letter to ATF Director Dettelbach about it as well. So, and of course, the White House counsel sent a snarky letter, but didn't deny that there was collusion. And so the chairman sent a second letter and said, the documents by early August, or we're going to subpoena them, essentially. So there was, you know, no question, coordination, collusion, conspiracy, you choose how you want to describe it, between the White House, Everytown, and Chicago to bring this frivolous lawsuit against the company for making a legal product that, you know, law enforcement all across the country buys, the Chicago Police Department buys and uses. You know, it's the largest, most popular handgun sold in America. You know, and ATF agents carry Glocks as well. So the notion that you would say that they Glock pistols are machine guns, we see that same ridiculous argument even by the gun control groups about modern sporting rifles.
Yep.
Well, they're actually machine guns because, yep, you know, somebody could illegally convert it. Well, yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, ridiculous. And fortunately, the courts have rejected those arguments. But the lawsuit against Glock is totally frivolous. It's illegal to import one of these switches. It's illegal to possess it because it's a machine gun unto itself. It's illegal to install and manufacture a machine gun. It's illegal to possess that machine gun unregistered. And obviously, it's a crime to illegally use it in the commission of a crime. How is any of that Glock's fault?
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. But, you know, so I want to ask you about this, too, because one of the other things that Pete Fraselli said the last time we had him on the show is that, in addition to, you know, pushing the ATF to reclassify Glocks as machine guns, the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, according to Pete, was also pushing for another rule, not necessarily from the ATF, but for another rule that would say, okay, gun makers, if you are selling guns to government agencies, you cannot sell firearms to the civilian market. Have you heard that as well?
I've seen that suggested. I don't know if it's under serious consideration, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I know there's been legislation, I believe, introduced in the House that would say, you know, you can't sell to the civilian market. So, but, you know, it's not not serious legislation, but
Okay.
you mentioned at the top of the our talk about Secret Service and the hearing. I mean, it was just yesterday, the director of the White House talking about how the rifle that was misused by this attempted assassin was collapsible stock, suggesting like it was a folding stock. I mean, it was just, it's just so you can adjust the stock to fit the shooter, like as if that's some kind of nefarious feature. So and of course the immediate calls for banning modern sporting rifles, which I will at least say I appreciate AOC acknowledging that they're the most, most popular rifles out there. They are obviously commonly owned and protected by the Second Amendment. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, and and again, a lot of this stuff, as you say, is coming from the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. And although Rob Wilcox, he's kind of seen as the man pulling the strings, it is Kamala Harris who is ostensibly in charge of the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, right? That's part of her portfolio as well, just like the border. So again, this goes back to the fact that gun control is one of the central components of Kamala Harris's resume, quite honestly. And so this is something that, again, I really do hope that gun owners take this seriously. I know that, there's been this sort of sense of complacency with Biden at the top of the ticket saying, everything is going to be just fine. No one's going to vote for this doddering old fool. This is a different ballgame. And I think we've seen just the media coverage over the past week, the elevation of Kamala Harris on a pedestal. They don't want to talk about her record. They don't want to talk about her policies. They don't want to talk about her positions. They don't want to talk about any of that, right? They just want to talk about, oh, she bought a Charlie Mingus record. She likes jazz, Larry. Oh, she's hip. She's cool. She's brat. And that's where we're going to get.
Yeah.
I know. It felt weird just even coming out of my mouth. That's what we're going to get from the media between now and November. And so it is up to us to actually highlight her record.
Yes. And, the best person to defeat Kamala Harris is Kamala Harris. All you have to do is play back clips of interviews where she takes these outrageous ultra-liberal positions like banning private insurance, confiscating guns, admitting she's the most liberal senator in the United States. If she wants to run on her record as a prosecutor, I would just tell people to go look up the clip of Tulsi Gabbard debating her when they were both running for president. And it was Tulsi Gabbard's remarks at the debate pointed or aimed directly at Kamala Harris's that drove her out of the race before Iowa, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So, I think Kamala Harris will defeat Kamala Harris.
I certainly hope that you're right. I suspect that you're right. And again, gun owners can provide an assist, by supporting organizations like Protect Liberty PAC so that we can, bring Kamala Harris's words to the American people and not just the words that the press want to report on.
And make sure that we don't have anti-gun senators taking over the chamber. That's critically important as well.
Yeah, absolutely right. Larry, as always, I appreciate you coming on the program. Let's just leave the baseball topic to another conversation. There's nothing good for me to talk about there. But I do appreciate your time. Give folks the website for Protect Liberty PAC one more time.
It's just www.protectlibertypacpac.com. Protectlibertypac.com.
All
right. And honestly, whatever you can do to chip in to help the cause would be greatly appreciated.
All right, Larry, thank you so much, man. We'll talk again soon.
Good to see you. Thanks, buddy.
My thanks again to Larry for joining me on the program. I know we'll be talking to him again very soon. I there's a part of me that wants to offer my predictions to who Kamala Harris is going to pick, but I think I'm going to keep my opinion to myself right now. But again, suffice it to say that of the names on the short list, the best of the bad bunch is probably Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who, as I said, allowed constitutional carry to take effect without signing it into law. He didn't veto it. I think he realized that the votes were there to override his veto, and he didn't want that on his record. But that's about the most you can say for Andy Beshear when it comes to Roy Cooper, when it comes to Josh Shapiro, when it comes to Mark Kelly. All of them, again, with an extensive history of support for gun control measures and even gun control activism. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to see much moderation on this ticket when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms and the Second Amendment. All right, let's turn now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Florida. Man arrested for possession of short-barreled firearm, sentenced to 6 months in jail and 3 months of probation. Now, I know that a lot of you may be saying, well, that shouldn't even be a crime at all, right? Yeah, the specifics of this case are really what makes this a recidivist report. 28-year-old Kevin Gabriel Arias Rivera, sentenced to 180 days in jail and 3 years probation, after entering a no-contest plea to possession of a short-barreled shotgun, as well as 2 counts of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Okay. And not a nonviolent felony either. According to the Alachua Chronicle, Arias Rivera in 2016 was convicted on federal charges of carjacking with a firearm in Puerto Rico. He was sentenced to 87 months in prison, followed by 3 years of probation. His probation was terminated in Texas in August of last year. So this is a violent felon. Presumably, even the Supreme Court would say that Mr. Arias Rivera did not possess his Second Amendment rights any longer, right? He has been adjudicated as a violent felony and therefore has lost his Second Amendment rights. So it was back in April, a woman who'd been dating Arias Rivera called 911 and reported that he had taken her gun and wouldn't give it back. And during an argument over the gun, he allegedly took the victim's phone, punched her in the face, then pushed her to the ground. A witness corroborated the victim's account of the incident. He then reportedly took out a different gun, which was a unserialized firearm based on a Glock 23. And he gave that gun to the victim, and he took her Glock 23, which was serialized. He allegedly put her gun in a backpack and then drove away. He came back a short time later without the backpack. Police, meanwhile, had shown up on the scene. A canine searched the apartment complex, found the backpack in a dumpster. Inside the backpack, the victim's Glock. There was a Taurus handgun. There was also a Winchester Ranger Model 140 12-gauge shotgun with the barrel and stock sawed off to make it more concealable. Arias Rivera originally charged with 3 counts of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, possession of a short-barreled shotgun, obstructing communication with law enforcement, tampering with evidence, grand theft of a firearm, and domestic battery. And then formal charges of possession of a short-barreled shotgun and 2 counts of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon were filed 2 weeks after he was arrested. And then he gets the plea deal. 6 months in jail, 3 years probation. I have questions. The first question, why wasn't this case kicked up to federal court? Under federal law, Arias Rivera could have been looking at 10 years behind bars for every count of possessing a firearm as a convicted felon. Now, granted, those charges, if he had been sentenced to 10 years in prison, those charges likely would have run concurrently, right? And the 10-year maximum is rarely doled out, but he would have gotten more than 6 months. So that's the first question. Why was this case kept in the local courts in Florida? And then, of course, the second question is, why? Why offer him a plea deal? Why offer a convicted violent felon a deal that allows him to walk free? Again, sentenced to 6 months. Time off for good behavior if he gets time, any credit for time he spent behind bars awaiting trial. Arias Rivera could be out on the streets in a matter of weeks after, again, a violent incident in which he allegedly abused his girlfriend, took her firearm, and was found in possession of several others. With a violent criminal history. Again, I don't understand the prosecution's rationale here. But it definitely qualifies Kevin Gabriel Arias Rivera for today's recidivist report. On to today's Armed Citizen story from Portland, Oregon, where a neighbor intervened after a woman was stabbed by her boyfriend, shooting and injuring the suspected attacker. This happened a couple of days ago in Portland. It was actually last Friday night, according to the Portland Police Bureau. It was just after 9 p.m. Officers responded on a report that a woman had been stabbed in the arm by her boyfriend. When they got there, they tried to find the suspect, but they couldn't. He was no longer there, so they took the woman to the hospital where her injuries were treated. And then a couple hours later, just before 11 p.m., police were called back to the same address after reports that a neighbor had tried to retrieve the injured woman's dog and was met by the stabbing suspect. The neighbor's boyfriend had gone with her to get the dog. According to police, the neighbor said that the suspect came at her with a knife and she shot and injured him. Police said the woman also accidentally shot and injured her own boyfriend during the incident, which is unfortunate. Both men taken to the hospital with serious injuries, both expected to recover, thankfully. The neighbor who shot both men surrendered her firearm to police, cooperating with the investigation. As of last report, she's not been arrested. And again, if she was threatened by the same individual who just stabbed his girlfriend a couple of hours previously, I say she has a pretty good case of self-defense. So we'll keep our eyes open for any more follow-ups. I haven't seen any to date, but hopefully there is more news that emerges here in the days and weeks to come. And finally today, a good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A group of Jewish Boy Scouts who helped to save a man who went into cardiac arrest while on a flight headed towards LaGuardia Airport. Channel 7 News in New York reporting on this. It was a couple of weeks ago. Scout leader Evan Gilder and a bunch of scouts were on their way back from a camping trip in Cimarron, New Mexico, which is an absolutely beautiful part of the country, by the way. He said that we had 2 weeks previously become and know how to function as a team. So they're there flying on the plane, Southwest Airlines flight, and the flight attendant got on the public address system and asked if there was a doctor on board. There were, as it turns out, three doctors as well as a nurse on board, but they needed some extra hands. Evan Gilder says CPR is a really, really difficult thing to do. You can do it for a few minutes and you really tire out. 16-year-old Eagle Scout Ariel Yaron said, Gilder said, all right, boys, everybody who knows CPR training, go, 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 go. Moshe Grimaldi, who's 17, said, we formed a CPR line. And the scouts helped to perform CPR for over 40 minutes, trying to get a pulse until the plane could make an emergency landing in Pittsburgh when the flight attendant told them to take their seats. Evan Gilder says one of the doctors said very calmly, if we do that, if we take our seats, this patient's going to die for sure. So they kept performing CPR till the plane was on the ground. Evan Gilder said, as we're getting sort of close, they detected a pulse. And so we don't know what happened to the individual, but he was alive apparently when that plane landed and when emergency crews were able to get on board. Obviously, in large part, because there were medical professionals on that flight, but also because there was this group of scouts who knew how to perform CPR, who were willing to step up in a critically important moment and, again, perform their life-saving duties. It's amazing. And again, those scouts on board that plane, as well as scout leader Evan Gilder, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And we thank them for their very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next week. But don't forget, we will be keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information at BearingArms.com between now and next Monday, when we'll kick off with another Cam and Company. So be sure to check out BearingArms.com on Friday throughout the weekend. I am hopeful for a quiet weekend as far as the news goes, but that has not been the case for the past couple of weeks. So we'll be there to cover any breaking news as it happens. And of course, keep me up to date on all of the latest litigation, legislation, armed citizen stories, the good news, the bad news, and even the ugly news about our right to keep and bear arms. We've got it all covered for you there at Bearing Arms. Do have a great weekend. I really appreciate you being a part of the show today. We'll see you back here soon. And until then, be well, be safe.